Thank you, Roz. And thank you, everyone, for having me at your meeting. Fall on your knees and draw near to the one who made a way for this weary world to rejoice. My name is Elle, and I am a recovered emotional overeater. My home group is the OA Footsteps Walk in Literature group at 6 a.m. I do see a couple people from that meeting. Welcome. And since this is a newcomer meeting, I will share my experience, strength, and hope. I'll qualify my compulsions with food and what I did to overcome them using a first things first, easy does it, and accepting life on life's terms. So to qualify, this pretty much sums it up. My stepmother was a cake decorator. So you could just imagine what my life was like. And if I reshape what her strengths were, it's really the artistry, because having to decorate so many of those objects, which I'll call because I don't want to keep saying it, she eventually used styrofoam cylinders and decorated those with a cream texture with no sugar in it, just to teach the class, teach other people how to do it. It's a form of artistry. With that, I've always been on the search of how to have your cake and eat it too. I used to make running group called Camp Cupcake. People would say, this is Camp Gladiator, not Camp Cupcake. And I deliberately put Camp Cupcake on my shirt because I am always looking for an easy, softer, gentler way. However, I sharing more of my childhood. And my first experience with my stepmother, she prepared a lovely meal with asparagus. You could just imagine. And I must have been 4 or 5. And of course, I put the whole thing in my mouth, and then I was chewing and chewing and chewing the stalk, and then eventually I just spit it on my plate. And I wouldn't say there was an eating disorder, but it was just an example of I had something I didn't like and I had to get it out. Then came along high school, and of course I did the drinking and smoking, probably age 14, and I met a friend who we both had bulimia together, as if that's something you would do. And she was top notch. Like, I think she was even on a news show about it. And I kind of did it to expel my sins of overeating. And I think she was a level up where she just did it all the time. It wasn't like, oops, I ate too much. Boom. She was much worse. And I think that was part of my not realizing that I had any kind of addiction, because I always saw, well, that person's much worse off than I am. So I'm just whatever. I'll just be better. I just thought I was being a bad person and I was just going to be better. Little did I know that I was in an addiction relapse cycle probably my whole life. And I didn't even really know it because I didn't know I had these addictions, which in the AA or even the OA, it's described as you have an allergy and you also have the obsession. You know this isn't good for you and you just keep doing it. Okay, so then I did that through high school. And that's not living on life's terms. That's trying to deny the reality of what is happening, and by still being slim, even though overeating. Then fast forward. So I'll just fast forward to how I came into recovery. I have 2 kids, and I never was overweight in my entire life. After my first child, I joined Weight Watchers, and I clockwork, lost all the baby weight within 12 weeks, achieved lifetime membership, no problem. But on my second one, somehow the weight came on faster, still just the normal size. But then I must have just got comfortable with that. It's insulating to have a little extra weight, kind of keeps things at bay. And it's also kind of like the good girl's addiction to just overeat. Alcoholics tend to hurt people more outwardly, and that has its own repercussions, but you can quietly overeat and nobody's really going to complain. In fact, they're happy that you're not bothering them. So it is something. However, my stepmom eventually passed away from complications with diabetes in June of 2021. And I had joined Overeaters Anonymous, and it was during the pandemic. So I sent in for the little coin. And I joined in May of 2021, around Mother's Day. And I had noticed that my mother-in-law was practicing a different form of gluttony. I had talked about this, where she's super slim. She doesn't binge and purge or anything like that, but she does a whole thing with the tea, and she's gluttonous of everyone's time. Like, everything revolves. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be a glutton, I'm going to be more like, just make a big production about the tea, not necessarily eating stuff. So I do try to do that. That's one of the things I do. And then at the beginning, I mentioned fall on your knees. So really, if you think about it, when you have an addiction, a lot of times you are putting that as your higher power. And instead of falling on your knees, purging into a toilet, you could be just praying. So getting in the habit of praying. And if you don't have a higher power or don't understand, that's up to you. But just getting quiet and sit, you know, sitting in a child's pose on your knees and see what comes up. So that's all I recommend. But one of the things that brought me, I had a therapist, and I really went to her because I thought I had a problem with my food plan. And I said, by this time, I gave up bulimia many years ago. I kind of just did that in high school. So as an adult, I didn't do that. So I was just living, accepting life on life's terms. Like, if I overeat, I'm going to be a little bit overweight, and then just accepting that. So that actually is a healthy sign for someone who's formerly bulimic, is just to be overeat, let it stay there. That's a step toward healing. So I learned to live with that. And then I had been kickboxing with my friend, and I was keeping track of my food. And I finally said, I can't stay within my points because I've been having the wine. So I said, oh, her name's Jeanette. Jeanette, I think I need to go to Overeaters Anonymous. I can't stay in my points because of the wine or the whatever I was doing every night. It is a cunning, baffling, progressive disease. And then she said, forget AA. I mean, forget OA. You need to go to AA. She told me to stop drinking first. So that's what I did. That was 3 years ago. I became sober on August 24, 2019. Luckily, before the pandemic. I can't imagine. It's very hard for newcomers during the pandemic. So luckily we have all these Zooms. And I quit the alcohol. And what happens, though, is when you're sober or abstinent, all of a sudden you're feeling those feelings. And unless you have the coping skills, which are outlined by the 12 steps, which I won't repeat because we had them at the beginning, then those problems will persist, and you won't have anything to placate you and help you bite your tongue. So what I want to do now is on the journey of sobriety, one thing I learned after my mom passed away is that her love language was acts of service, which she did for me. She did so many things. I always had the best birthdays. My birthday's right before Christmas. And so I just had all the best. But I was just really looking for words of affirmation. So people do have different love languages. So if you are eating or stuffing because you're feeling like somebody not loving you, take a look at love languages and just see, like, maybe they are loving and appreciating you, but you just don't really understand their way. So anyway, that's something I learned too late. And I did decide to make OA my commitment. And then one of the things that I wanted to highlight on is that the primary purpose of Overeaters Anonymous is to both abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps. Because sometimes I hear a lot of people, oh, I'm never going to eat sugar again. I'm never going to eat flour. That's great, because if those are your triggers and that's in your food plan, that's great. It's the difference between a white knuckle driver and an easy does it driver. I drive slow, so I'm a white knuckle driver. But if I'm with somebody who can handle the car and who can drive better than me, and I'm trying to make that person white knuckle, you know, they may be able to do a better job without the white knuckle. So that's why we have the dignity of choice in the food plan. And same when choosing a sponsor, you kind of want to have a match like, hey, I could stay abstinent and within the guardrails doing these things. I can take a looser approach. Or if you need to like micromanage everything, then choose that type of sponsor and food plan. And I always like to suggest the option of a temporary sponsor arrangement, because sometimes you could get into a sponsorship situation and not know if it clicks, and then you have the option out. But these are the food behaviors that I have let go of, and I'm just throwing them out here in case somebody wants to talk about any of these. I no longer binge. I no longer purge. I no longer have my 3 o'clock slump. If I do, I go for tea and maybe something that's within my food plan. I gave funny speeches about this in Toastmasters before, but I no longer have dashboard diner where you eat in your car and all that. I don't do that anymore. I used to say Wendy's didn't invent fourth meal. I did. You know, they have that commercial. I had all these funny little things. Or when I come home for work, I no longer run to the one I love the most, which is the refrigerator. Or eating a dinner while you're cooking a dinner, all those BLT, bite, licks, and taste. No longer do that. Dessert, the way I look at dessert, of course, I grew up where dessert was a staple. And so if you're eating a dessert and it's within your food plan and you've planned for it, and you're eating it in a civilized manner at a table with other people, sharing, enjoying, that's one thing. But if you're doing the Huckleberry Finn character where there's a pie in the window and they take out a slice and take the rest of the pie for yourself, so there's a difference between eating a nice dessert in the celebratory fashion versus taking the whole thing. And so anyway, there's that balance. I no longer, if I eat a dessert, it's appropriate. I no longer do late night eating. I decide, oh, if I ate everything, it must be time for bed. And brushing the teeth and putting on the Listerine, which kills, in my opinion, can kill some of the germs from all the colds that are going around. That signals to you that you're done eating. I like to do that. I no longer do the midnight snacking. All of that was, you know, stuffing feelings. And I no longer have to do that. I've traded it for the freedom of choice. I basically follow the 301 plan. And I have studied, because I was a half marathon runner. What you eat is 90% of losing weight. So I can't outrun my bad diet. And once I learned that, I was like, why am I running so much? So I like to follow the 301 plan, which is 3 meals, 0 snacks, and 1 meal at a time. We live 1 day at a time and also 1 meal at a time, following the dignity of choice. And then just to open it up, I did have some paper from a workshop that described the difference between abstinence and the food plan. The food plan should support your abstinence. And so I'll just ask some questions out here before I end my talk. Is my abstinence strong enough? These are some thoughts. Reflect on your recovery using the following questions. Am I working the steps? Steps are our new coping mechanism. Instead of hugging the refrigerator, I'm clearing the wreckage of my past, setting things straight, no longer having to be phony peacemaking. I'm actually making peace with others, seeing my part in it, clearing the space. And now I could just be, I don't have to pretend anymore. Do I pray and meditate? Maybe when I'm reaching for the food, I can pray about it instead. Did I plan my food for the day? Am I maintaining and we're working toward a healthy body weight? Did I rely on my higher power to get or stay abstinent? And I do love the 11th step where it talks about just knowing our higher power's will for us and the power to carry that out, where that was such a game changer hearing it that way. My friend once asked me, how could God grant everybody their wishes? And I said, well, God's not going to go around and give everybody a boat. He's going to fulfill his will for your life if you're willing to accept it and know what it is. And that's just a game changer. If everybody just knew what their purpose was and tuned in to have the power to carry that out, we would probably all find a way to get what we want and live peacefully. Do I ask for help? Do I make OA phone calls? One thing I think is a good thing, whether you're in recovery program or not, is have three contacts that you text and just say hi, send an inspiring photo, because that way when you are in a deep slump, it won't be so hard to pick up the phone. You have three friends along the way that you can reach out to. Do I have an attitude of gratitude? Do I help others? Do I have an action plan to stay abstinent? I have my AA addiction and then my OA, and most addictions are rooted in codependency. So how do you attend to all those different things? Because sometimes just going to the same meeting day in, day out, that might not be effective. You have to mix it up or do what's best for you that way. Do I have a sponsor? Yes. Do I sponsor? Yes. Those are consistent. If some people who are very big book oriented, the way that the original founders stayed sober was reading that big book with each other. And so stay rooted in the big book. Is what I'm doing currently working for me to remain abstinent? Am I white knuckling through it, or am I taking easy does it? If I'm white knuckling, then maybe I look at something that doesn't trigger me. If I'm triggered by sugar, then I'll find a way to get rid of that, and so on and so forth. And then what activities will I not participate in to maintain my abstinence? Well, one thing, I'm pescatarian and I probably won't partake in keto. So if I hear somebody thumping a keto diet, then I tune out. But it works for some people, so that's fine. So you make your own rules as you go. So with that, I would like to also say that it's very cool that this Christmas and the eighth day of Hanukkah line up together. And I'm not sure if anyone's read the book called The Life of Pi, but in it, the character quotes, "The house of faith has many rooms." And with that, I wish merry tidings to all people who wish for peace on earth. And thank you for having me share. This did keep me out of the kitchen for at least an hour today, and I'm very grateful. I will turn it back to you, Roz. Thank you, everyone.